The Tom Woods Show, episode 2048.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hey, everybody. Tom Woods here. I got a short-ish episode for you today. Lou and I went a little bit long this week, but I got a short one for you today. And this is actually my appearance with Jeff Deist of the Mises Institute on Judge Andrew Napolitano's new program, Judging Freedom. So I'll have a link to that. I think you can just go to judgenap.com, find out more about that. But we're talking about the Supreme Court decisions regarding mandates, vaccine mandates. And then we're just talking about the state of American society and the prospects for a national divorce, stuff like that. So I had fun doing it, and I hope you have fun listening. So here we go.
Hello there, everyone. Judge Napolitano here on Judging Freedom. Today is Thursday, January 13th, 2022. I'm happy to have with me two longtime friends, intellectual and ideological colleagues. Jeff Deist is the president of the Mises Institute. He's also a very fine and well-accomplished tax lawyer and a superb libertarian theoretician. How could you not be running the Mises Institute? Tom Woods is, quite frankly, one of the most extraordinary public intellectuals of our day, who is gifted and talented and educated in history as well as in economics. Sometimes I'm afraid to talk to Tom about economics because he knows so much more about it than I do. But the three of us who have worked together in many, many different functions advancing the ideas of human liberty are happy to be here today. So, gentlemen, welcome to Judging Freedom. I guess we got to start with the news of this afternoon, which is that the Supreme Court, Tom, this is a typical John Roberts cut the baby in half compromise, invalidated the Department of Labor's mandate for vaccine or testing for all employers of 100 or more employees, but upheld the Department of Health and Human Services' similar mandate of vaccine with no option for testing and no exemptions whatsoever for everybody who works in healthcare that is funded largely by the federal government. The opinion stopping Joe Biden in its tracks was terrific and basically was Justice Neil Gorsuch saying, who decides, the president or the Congress? Who writes the laws in this country, Tom?
Well, I guess with the two cases, I guess the distinction that they were trying to make is whether or not the authority imposing the requirement had been granted some kind of statutory authority to do so. So the claim is that the Secretary, I guess, of Health and Human Services has long had almost a plenary authority with regard to the administration of Medicare and Medicaid and attaching requirements to places that are receiving those types of money. So they upheld that for that reason. But they said that OSHA, by contrast, which, as you're indicating, Judge, should not be making general public health decisions for the entire country, has not been understood to have a sweeping mandate, so to speak, to deal with matters of general public health, only of occupational safety. So I think that is a cogent argument. Although I think, Judge, for people like the three of us here, this kind of nitpicking over who has the authority to say what when is a little bit less bracing than, say, a good old-fashioned decision saying it's not really ultimately just a question of who, but it's a question of what is being done. Right. I don't frankly care that much about who orders me to do something against my will. It's the ordering of me to do something against my will that I care about primarily, and that is something I don't see constitutional authorization for. But even though the decision is not written the way I would ideally want it, I think it's a major setback for the lizard people, which is what I call the ruling regime. And I'll take what I can get.
Right, right. Jeff, there's some great language, no surprise, in Justice Thomas's dissent. It's almost like going back to constitutional law in law school. He's reminding the court, hey, guys, health, safety, welfare, and morality is reserved to the states, not to the federal government. Tom just described very nicely what the Chief Justice thinks of the federal statutes that empower HHS. I'm more concerned than I think Justice Thomas was, and I suspect you are, Jeff, with what the Constitution says about it.
Well, of course, sweeping police powers have always been reserved to the states. The federal government nor the federal agencies have any sort of authority to be governing this sort of thing. I mean, I like Tom's point here, which is we don't really care about separation of powers, which are mostly thrown out by now. But what we do care about is federal authority. And if we're going to have, you know, the constitutional rubric of a compelling state interest and various tests, certainly this one, shutting down businesses of over 100 people unless everyone gets a COVID vaccine or a weekly test, ought to fall under the kind of strict scrutiny test where the employer really has to show a compelling interest. I would argue there is no compelling state interest, certainly no compelling federal interest in this mandate, because I don't think the virus is that lethal. I don't think it's worth shutting down the world over. But, you know, all that said, what's so interesting, Judge, is that we look at the result. In other words, the legal reasoning, what the law actually says, what the administrative agency authorization really is, these are secondary concerns. We view the Supreme Court as results-oriented, right. You know, winner-take-all super legislature, and that's effectively what it is.
I think that Justice Gorsuch, who probably is the most libertarian-leaning of the nine, hit a very nice nail on the head, Tom, when he said, and he said this before, there's no public health exceptions in the Constitution. And,
right.
And I think he's alluding to what you were talking about, which is there simply is no authority for anybody to tell you what to put in your body against your will.
Right. So in his concurring opinion in the OSHA decision, he said, I have it actually up here on my screen. He says, he's talking about the distinction between state and federal. We all remember Justice Sotomayor saying, I'm not sure I understand why the federal government might not have a power, but the states would. And
Because in her world, the federal government is a general government that can legislate for anything.
Right, of course. But Gorsuch says the federal government's powers are not general, but limited and divided. Not only must the federal government properly invoke a constitutionally enumerated source of authority to regulate this area or any other, it must also act consistently with the Constitution's separation of powers. So he's got that stuff in there in his concurring opinion. So that was refreshing to see. But as I say, I consider this mandate to be such an outrageous injustice that even if the court's way of arguing is not as robust as I might have liked, as long as it overturns the mandate, I'm pleased.
So Jeff, in New Jersey, no surprise, the legislature gave Governor Murphy some of its authority and allowed him to craft laws and use the state police and various other aspects of the state government to enforce it. Profound violation of separation of powers. Anyway, that expired on Monday. He begged them to extend it. It's a new legislature, still controlled by the Democrats, but not as overwhelmingly as the one that ended on Monday. They said no. He thumbed his nose at them and declared a state of emergency, which automatically extends his powers by another 45 days. Will this madness never end?
Well, it's not perfect, but people can leave New Jersey a lot more easily than they can leave the United States. They don't have to learn a new language. They don't have to obtain a passport. And they're allowed to go back into New Jersey to visit their friends and family or loved ones or tend to their business or their property in a way that's harder to do on an international scale. So I do think the great migration we're seeing throughout the various 50 states since all the new COVID regimes went into place is a good thing and a healthy thing. I think it's what the 10th Amendment prescribes for us. You know, I don't know a lot about Murphy other than he seems COVID crazed, and there are states like Tom's home state of Florida where things are less crazed. So I think this is a fantastic experiment. I love it. I like to see these governors sniping at each other. I like to see a little bit of competition between states, and I'm all for it. Let's have it. Let's see who has bodies stacked up outside morgues and who doesn't. And it turns out that no matter what you do with masks or schools or vaccines, it's pretty much the same. It really goes by age more than anything else. That's the greatest determining factor for COVID mortality. So, you know, if you're going to have the same fatalities either way, you might as well be open and free.
So you're right. Uncle Ronnie Reagan used to say the beauty of our system is you can vote with your feet. Of course, when he said that, the feds, though bloated and expansive, weren't nearly as bloated and expansive as they are today. Before we get to another subject, I have to put this little footnote in. More people left New Jersey in 2021 and moved to another state than left any other state. I'm saying this to you while I'm in my home at the northwest tip of New Jersey, a state I was born in and raised in and for the most part of my life educated in and sat on the bench in, but it's just, it's terrible. How much longer do you think the federal government can be around, Tom, when it can't pay its bills, when some states are beginning to engage in soft nullification, like the state of Texas nullifying Roe versus Wade and the Supreme Court allowing them to get away with it? And we know that numerous other states, Florida and South Dakota come to mind, are about to do nearly the same thing.
Well, I'll tell you something, Judge. As a historian, all I have to do is be able to tell you what happened in the past. Predicting the future, I don't much care for because I'm apparently no good at it. When it came to March 2020, I thought, surely by the end of April, people are going to be up in arms about all this. Right? Right. You know, I thought for sure there'd be outrage. I thought even Hollywood actors, despite their thirst for conformity, would have to say something. And man, was I wrong. So I don't know exactly. I can't give you a date, but I can say that what you're describing is going to happen de facto. We're seeing people living two different kinds of lifestyles. I mean, I don't know what to say to people who are debating whether they should wear an N95 or a cloth mask or whatever. Yeah. They inhabit a completely different universe from me. And in terms of whether it's the mask wearing or even at this stage, complying with demands that they not attend events with more than 50 people. You know, for heaven's sake, you've done everything they've asked over and over and over repeatedly, and you're still facing these restrictions. And as you say, Jeff, it doesn't really seem to do anything. I mean, I can understand why in March 2020, you might think that if we shut everything down and we do this or that, and we impose this or that requirement, that there'll be a noticeable difference. But whatever difference there is doesn't seem to be particularly noticeable, and yet you're still complying with it. Every time you see a sporting event or a concert, I went to a concert in Columbus, Ohio, a month and a half ago, 20,000 capacity place, didn't even require a negative test to get in. 20,000 people, almost nobody was wearing a mask, and we just had a great old time, and nothing came of it.
That would have been impossible in New Jersey.
No doubt. But this is happening. That's the thing. There's an America where all this is happening,
right?
And they seem to be doing perfectly okay. Eventually, it's just going to shake out. Who cherishes life and wants to live? Well, if that's you, then unfortunately, it may come to the result that you do have to uproot yourself from a place that may have tremendous sentimental value from you, that you envisioned raising your kids and playing with your grandkids in that state. And you thought, you know, like Carol Markowitz from New York City, who had defended New York and said, yeah, it's a crazy, terrible political scene, but it's such a wonderful place to live. Even she had to give up and move to Florida. It's wow. A very, very sad thing. I miss New York City very much, but I couldn't possibly live there anymore. Yeah, it's time to make some hard decisions.
Jeff, you and I have spoken together about the idea of reversing the flow of power, not to Washington, but from Washington. But Tom's point is scary because in certain parts of the country, the public has just bowed down and said, yes, Governor Murphy, yes, President Biden, yes, fill in the blank, bureaucrat, keep me safe, even if it's an illusion of safety, I'll give up my freedom.
True. Absolutely true. But I think we'd like to isolate that wherever possible. And I think we'd like to give people options. And I do think a form of soft secession is happening. I think it was happening before COVID, but I think it's been greatly accelerated by this. I mean, people are choosing to move to climes which are more amenable to them, whether that's because of COVID restrictions, whether that's because of taxes or starting a business, whether that's because of weather. It hardly matters because this is happening. It's happening without any design. We like that. It's happening just because people's demonstrated preferences are more important than their stated preferences. Let's just say what they actually do. And in this case, moving with their feet. And let's not forget, America today is largely an economic arrangement. It's barely a country. And it's certainly not much of a nation. I would argue that there are many, many nations within the United States. I live in SEC football nation, for example. That's as good of a cultural marker as any other, right? To describe where I live.
I live in an Italian-American nation, Tom.
Yeah, absolutely. You live in Pasco,
New Jersey.
But, you know, I think we should celebrate this. I think regionalism is what we've got going for us now in this country. And I think 330 million people, essentially ruled by a few thousand people in Washington, D.C., or sometimes four or five Supreme Court justices, is just a recipe for dysfunction and disaster. So
I think we're going to break off, Jeff, into separate semi-autonomous countries.
I don't in the short term.
When the feds can't pay their bills and they can't employ people anymore?
I think when an economic shock comes, that would be the impetus. In other words, in 1984, if you'd been sitting in the former Soviet Union saying, hey, I think in 5 years, we're going to break up without a single shot fired and let Latvia, Lithuania, Estonia go, people would have said you were crazy. And I think they would have been right. You were crazy in 1984. In 1989, you weren't. And so I think the same thing applies to the United States. As long as we're economically viable, as long as our dollar is relatively strong, as long as our distribution systems and food and all these and energy and transportation and all these sort of blocking and tackling things work pretty well, then no, I think we won't. But that day is going to come.
So, Tom, put your economist hat on. Are places like Florida, where you are, Texas, which thumbs its nose at the federal government, are they economically self-sufficient or potentially economically self-sufficient? Could they really sustain themselves without the rest of the country or with just treating the rest of the country as a trading partner?
Well, I think they would still want to trade with the rest of the country, but there's some statistic where Florida recently had 25% of the new jobs created in the entire United States were all in Florida. And that's an astonishing number. And what's more, I think if we're going to talk about the economy, we have to think about what are some of these blue cities doing to their economies? Now, my understanding is that the Twin Cities in Minnesota have now banded together to put together a temporary vaccine passport system, where my understanding is that if you can't show proof of vaccination because you're under age 5, you have to have a negative test. So your 2-year-old has to have a negative test to go into a restaurant with you. That's not sustainable. No one's going to visit a place like that. Right. That's going to hurt them economically. Obviously, New York City, the Broadway shows that we're all familiar with, cannot survive on New York traffic alone. They
Correct.
Can't survive on domestic traffic alone. They
Right.
require international traffic. And most of these places do not have vaccination for 5-year-olds. So they are all destroying themselves little by little. And I know there are some dopes in New York who think, well, I'm glad we don't have so many tourists around. It's not as crowded. Well, nice for you, but not nice for everybody whose business relies on that kind of traffic. So I think they're shooting themselves in the foot, and there's likely to be a renaissance in the red cities.
So our dear friend and mentor to the three of us, the great Lou Rockwell, channeling his best James Madison, has argued that the president should just be a figurehead who makes sure that the wheels of a small federal government work. He shouldn't be telling us how to live and telling us what to wear and telling us where to go and expressing an opinion on everything under the sun. He shouldn't be able to spend money on his own. Is that a pipe dream, Jeff?
It is now because of the 20th century. The unitary executive is now firmly in place. I would love to live in an America where Congress, the makeup of Congress mattered far more than who the president was or who
Right.
the members of the Supreme Court were. I would love that. I think,
and that's what the framers expected as well.
Absolutely. These are the people most accountable to us every 2 years in the House anyway. And so I think they ought to be declaring war. I think they ought to be setting policy. I think presidents should campaign not on their policies. They're not supposed to have policies. They should campaign on simply their managerial competence. I guess I'll have to live a while to see that day, though.
Tom, is this a pipe dream or is it going to happen while the three of us are alive? Well, I'm older than both of you combined, but...
Well, what could happen is that the president, because these people, they're all narcissists. They can't keep their opinions to themselves, but maybe they utter their opinions and nobody cares.
Right.
So, for example, you'll recall early in 2021, Joe Biden was saying that maybe by Independence Day, vaccinated families might be able to have small gatherings at their homes. Meanwhile, the rest of the country is planning big 4th of July barbecues. It didn't mean anything to them. So he's yapping away, but it didn't mean anything. But it's what Jeff says about the 20th century is correct. The very beginning of the 20th century, 1903, Teddy Roosevelt, who is beloved by Democrats and Republicans, which is how you can tell he's a bad guy. If Mitt Romney likes him and Bill Clinton likes him, he's got to be a bad guy.
Right. And John McCain's hero. Right.
Yeah. He's Bill Clinton's favorite Republican president, he said. Well, he had a summit. It might seem like a small thing, but he had a summit at the White House to deal with the question of college football being too rough. And there are too many injuries occurring.
I forget where that's in the Constitution, Tom.
Right. Of course. Now, of course, he's entitled to his personal opinion on that matter. But it would never have occurred to James Madison that he has to stick his nose in anything like that. But this led into this expectation that the president is this larger than life celebrity figure with opinions on everything. And we need to know what his golf handicap is and all this weird superstition. And this leads to these days people saying, don't you disobey my president. Thomas Jefferson did not want you talking like that. You know, that's right. The way a slave talks.
Right, right. Gentlemen, we can do this all afternoon. Thank you very much for your time. Those watching should know the three of us are the best of friends, and it's a joy for me to work with both of you. We'll do it again soon on Judging Freedom. All the best.
All right, everybody. I want to take a little time to share something with you before we go today, because I said this would be a short episode, but what I think I'll do is use some of the leftover time to share something that kind of lifted my spirits. And before I do that, I want to share something with you that may lift your spirits. Boy, what a ham-handed segue that is into my sponsor message from Skillshare. But let's say a quick word about it, because I really, really do love it. And it really, really can do a lot to lift your spirits during trying times. Here's how I would describe it. Skillshare is like the Netflix of online learning. Thousands and thousands of classes on all different topics that help bring out the creative side of you or help you build on some existing form of creativity that you already love. It can take you out of your comfort zone or it can help make you an expert at what you're already doing. But either way, it brings a bit of joy into your life. My own daughters have used it to improve their artwork, their creative writing, and even to learn American Sign Language. You can consume these classes anytime you want, 3 o'clock in the morning if you want to. They're short, to the point. They don't require you to put your life on hold. And in these classes, you get feedback from a welcoming community of similarly creative people who will help you along in your own creative journey. And of course, we're talking about fields like film and video, or marketing, or illustration, or productivity, or photography, or web development, or graphic design, all kinds of things that people do because it brings them joy, and also because it can be the foundation of a side hustle for yourself. I myself am a fan of Thomas Frank's class, Mastering Productivity, Create a Custom System That Works, because I want to maximize what I'm getting out of the time that I spend while I'm working so that I can work a little bit less and spend more time with my family and traveling and doing things that bring me extra joy. Explore your creativity at Skillshare.com/woods, where our listeners get a 1 month free trial. That's 1 month free at Skillshare.com/woods. All right, let's talk about the thing I want to share with you. I've been interested to try to figure out what's likely to happen with the vaccine passport systems in U.S. cities. Now, I'm probably going to say a little bit more about that tomorrow. At least it'll come up with regard to other countries. But in the U.S., in various cities, we've seen these things emerge, where to get into restaurants and fitness centers and entertainment venues and things of that sort, you need to show proof of vaccination. This makes no sense. There's no reason to think this protects anybody. And there's a lot more to be said, right? That in the UK, they're privately admitting that against the current variant, the vaccine effectiveness is so low that that's going to undermine the whole case for requiring vaccination of healthcare workers there in the NHS system. Anyway, we'll get to that tomorrow. I want to talk about the United States today. And I actually sent this out in my newsletter, but it bears repeating. And it shocks me. There might be listeners who are not on my list. That is very sad. Chartstheyforgot.com is a good way to get on the list, because then you get my ebook showing you all the different charts indicating that the virus does not seem to work the way we're told. So, how about that? Anyway, I was talking about this on the episode with Lou Rockwell recently, speculating that the effects on tourism of these vaccine passports would be very, very severe, and that it would hurt businesses. I think the sort of person who feels safer going to a restaurant because of a vaccine mandate in restaurants is the sort of person who won't go to a restaurant in the first place. Because this is the argument they make, that, oh, no, actually, it'll be a boon for business because people will feel safer. Yeah, okay, you're going to shut out all people ages 5 and up from the entire world who aren't quote unquote vaccinated. Are you kidding me? You're going to have a net benefit because of all the people who feel safe now. These kinds of hypochondriacs and psychotics are not going to be brought back to restaurants because of a vaccine passport system. Because these are the kinds of people who would be horrified that you're taking your holy mask off during your meal. So you're trying to appeal to crazy people, and you are alienating all the regular people who supported you during the difficult year of 2020. So somebody in my private group, the Tom Woods Show Elite, which remember is not on Facebook, has not been on Facebook for years now. So if that's holding you back from joining, don't let it. We are on a no censorship platform right now, and we have conversations like adults. And somebody weighed in my group to say this, and I just wanted to share this with you. I just listened to the latest episode with Lou Rockwell, and based on what you mentioned about vax passports, wanted to shed some light on what's happening in Chicago. I live just outside the city limits of Chicago, so I'm mostly impacted by the rules of the Cook County Health Department, which are mostly the same. Before the Cook County vax passport on everybody 5 and up ever even took effect, they revised it to be 16 and up for entertainment or fitness-related stuff. Only about a fourth of 5 to 11-year-olds, even in Cook County, are fully vaccinated. So this was going to be a death blow to all child activities. I was in the process of calling all extracurriculars for my kids before the revision to pull out my kids, and they said they had been getting flooded with similar calls and didn't know what they would do. I go to a small mom-and-pop gym, and when I called them to cancel my membership, they told me they would not be enforcing it, my first sign of hope. Many cities surrounding the Chicago core in Cook County have outright defied the order and said they will leave it up to the Cook County Health Department to enforce it, and in effect, this means it's flagrantly violated. Cook County and Chicago are trying their hardest to get people in line with violations, but the disobedience to the order is so widespread. I went to lunch downtown last week, and despite the signs of the vax and mask requirements, I walked right in unmasked and didn't hear a peep about any of it. Most people are just sick of this. I'm trying to find a place to schedule my kids' birthday party, and I'll ask them up front. Plenty in the defiant suburbs have told me they are not enforcing. The places that do seem to be enforcing the order are all major chain businesses and restaurants or places with a heavy concentration of branch COVIDians. Portillo's is a Chicago staple of a restaurant, and they are rigidly enforcing the order. When I went there with my family to test it, the restaurant was completely empty, unheard of on a Sunday afternoon. We went down the street to a small family-owned restaurant and ate there just fine, and it was packed. Some places are also being upfront about their disobedience. I was also in another part of Chicago that is largely non-woke zealots to a Wendy's the other day, and half the employees there weren't even wearing masks. I'm hearing through the grapevine from friends that in parts of the South and West neighborhoods of Chicago, businesses are laughing at people if they need to show vax cards. Those that are enforcing it are seeing massive drop-offs of about 50% of their revenue. So there is hope. What I bet will happen is that when the Omicron wave naturally dies down, they will get away from this order quickly, claim their fake victory, and then put it behind them. Well, indeed, we can hope for that. And that may even be quite likely. In the meantime, let's hope for a renaissance in all sensible cities, red or otherwise, because I, for one, do not intend to vacation somewhere where I'm not wanted. So this is evidence, by the way, of the benefits of being a supporting listener of the Tom Woods Show. One of the benefits is membership inside the Tom Woods Show Elite, where you read things like this every day, and you get real insight into what's actually happening. So if you like and appreciate what the old man is doing here on the Tom Woods Show, I'm telling you, you are absolutely going to love being a member of the Tom Woods Show Elite. And membership in that is via the website supportinglisteners.com. See you tomorrow.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.